Hi, this is the voice, Michael Schiavello. You're listening to the Premium Oddscast, hosted by leading MMA odds maker Nick Kalikas, fight scientist and author of Fightnomics, Reid Kuhn, and MMA journalist Brian Heminger. The absolute best UFC betting info, picks, statistics, and analysis from the most respected authority in mixed martial arts betting, MMAoddsbreaker.com.
Welcome to the Premium Oddscast, presented by BetDSI. I'm Brian Heminger, joined today by leading mixed martial arts oddsmaker Nick Kalikas to break down this Friday's UFC Fight Night 131 event, which takes place in Utica, New York. If you're unfamiliar with our format, Nick and I will break down the fight card from top to bottom, providing extensive analysis and a pick for each fight after doing our film study for the event. Looking back at our last event, we lost one unit for UFC Fight Night 130 after going 0-1 on our play on Brad Scott at underdog odds. Back to the present, UFC Fight Night 131 features a 13-fight card in total and will be aired on UFC Fight Pass and Fox Sports 1 this Friday night. Let's dive right in. Now, kicking things off on Fight Pass is a flyweight bout between Jared Brooks, who is 13-1, and Jose Torres making his UFC debut at 7-0. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Torres opened minus 265, the comeback on Brooks at plus 185. Looking over to our sponsored sportsbook, betdsi.eu. Make sure you guys check out the guys at DSI and give them some love. Right now over at DSI, it's Torres at minus 185, the comeback on Brooks at plus 155. And the odds reactions piece that we have up for UFC Fight Night 131 from Adam Martin is what I'm going to be quoting as far as the opening odds go. You can check that out on MMAoddsbreaker.com. So again, right now, current line, $1.85 for Torres, Brooks plus 155. The action has come in on Brooks. Torres is the popular fighter, finally getting a chance in the UFC. If, for those of you guys that don't know, I mean, this guy's been a hyped prospect for a long time. He's had an extensive amateur career, nothing but success. I mean, nothing but quality wins throughout his resume. He's the Titan FC multiple division champion. He's actually the bantamweight champ and the flyweight champion. I mean, that's how much talent he has. And they gave him decent competition along the way at Titan FC as well. So it's not like he was fighting in a bum league and, you know, getting these belts or whatnot. So he's been knocking on the UFC door for a long time, and he's finally getting a shot to come in. But they're not doing him any favors here, I'll tell you that. I mean, giving him Brooks in his UFC debut on short notice is going to be a handful for him. But Torres is definitely game. He's a well-rounded fighter, trains with a lot of good people. I mean, one of his main training partners oftentimes, as he says, is actually the bantamweight champion in TJ Dillashaw. So, I mean, he's training with the best possible training partners there is. He also has trained with American Top Team as well. Just, you know, he's in that group of elite, you know, prospects, and he gets to train with elite, you know, fellow, you know, prospects or champions as well. So Torres is right there, getting the best possible training. You could tell it's in his game. I mean, the guy has great boxing. He's got pretty good wrestling to go along with decent jiu-jitsu as well. Now, if there's any flaws in Torres' games, it is that he has been put on his back and controlled at times. So his takedown defense can definitely improve. His defense on the feet as well, he needs to move that head a little bit better at times because he does get clipped, but he's tough as nails. He has a pretty durable chin. And again, his boxing and his fight IQ and his precision are a thing of beauty. But again, I said he was going to have his hands full, and I mean it with Brooks. I mean, Jared Brooks is a very underrated fighter, especially in this spot. That's why the early action came in on Brooks, I think, because of, he's basically – presents a lot of problems for Torres with his wrestling more than anything else. I think that's why the early action came in Brooks' way, because if he's going to win this fight, he has to utilize his wrestling. That's the area that Torres suffers the most in, and I think that Brooks can repeatedly get takedowns. I don't know if he's going to be able to keep Torres down all that much or have a lot of success doing so, because Torres is that type of explosive fighter that manages more times than not to get back to his feet. But if anybody could do it, I think Brooks is one of the best wrestlers that Torres has ever faced. And with the UFC experience already in the books for Brooks as well, that doesn't hurt. He's coming off a very close, arguable split decision loss in Brazil, actually, against Figueiredo. And that was a very tough fight because Figueiredo is another prospect that was undefeated as well. So that fight could have went Brooks's way. So he could be undefeated right now as well. So basically what you have here is prospect versus prospect. Brooks is more of the wrestler. Torres, in this case, is more of the striker. So we're going to have an all-out war. We're going to see who strength is utilized most. And I think it's actually going to be Brooks. I think Brooks is going to get the takedowns. I think it's not going to be easy. I think it's going to be a war. The more time he spends on the feet, the more time it's going to be that he can definitely get clipped and get the fight stopped. So he needs to fight smart here, avoid Torres' strength, which is his boxing in this matchup, and get the takedowns, like I said, and kind of grind Torres out and try to win 2 or 3 rounds here. And I think he can do it, honestly, with his wrestling. So I'm going to go against the grain. I know that Torres is still a solid favorite here, but I'm going to pick the underdog Brooks as well. I think at plus 185, all the early action that came in his way, I do understand it. There was definitely value at plus 185. Could still be some value left at plus 155 as well. Because again, I think Brooks will get the takedowns and probably have a split decision type of event here going on in this first matchup to start off Fight Pass. So the pick is Brooks. Although I do take my hat off to Torres, I'm glad he made it to the UFC and he is a fun fighter to watch. So I wish nothing but the best for Torres, but unfortunately for him, I think his UFC debut is probably going to be a loss.
And I'm going to come in the other way. Torres has a major striking advantage in this fight, and I expect during the course of 3 rounds that he's going to put some serious hurt on Jared Brooks. Yes, Jared Brooks has a strong wrestling game, and he might be the best wrestler that Torres has faced thus far in his career, but I mean, Torres does come from a pretty strong wrestling background. He had a solid base. He trained with good wrestlers, and when he does get taken down in fights, which definitely does happen, he gets back up. So I think, yeah, Brooks is going to get takedowns, but is he going to be able to keep Torres down? That's the real question. And I don't know if he will. I think Torres, as long as this fight stays standing, is going to be dishing out some pain. And Jared Brooks is going to be getting more and more desperate as the fight goes on. I expect the only thing that really bothers me in this fight is the fact that while Torres is one of the best prospects that's been making his UFC debut in the last year or two, he's making the debut on short notice. He's stepping in on 2 weeks' notice, so I'm sure he's in good fight shape and everything, but that is a big concern. How is he going to handle the UFC debut? Is he going to have any jitters? Is he going to have an adrenaline dump? Those are all things that we just don't know about. I mean, yeah, he was a multi-division champion, so he should be pretty composed, but again, you just never know. I mean, there's been plenty of guys with strong track records that laid an egg in their UFC debut. So I'm a little concerned about that. But while Jared Brooks does have strong wrestling, I mean, this is a guy that is not an overwhelming wrestler. I mean, he's gone to split decision in both of his first UFC fights. And I think Jose Torres might be the toughest opponent he's faced yet in terms of skill. So I think Jose Torres, it's going to be a scrap. I wouldn't be shocked to see Brooks steal a round with his wrestling. Maybe Torres isn't able to get back up enough in one of the rounds, but I think Torres will get enough done here and do enough damage on the feet to win this fight. So I'm going to side with Jose Torres. Now moving up to the bantamweight division, we have Johnny Eduardo, who is 28-11, taking on Nathaniel Wood, who is 13-3. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Wood open minus 260 to comeback, and Eduardo at plus 180. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's minus 290 for Wood, the comeback, and Eduardo at plus 235. So a lot might just have tightened up a little bit, and a little bit more actually coming in Wood's way. Another prospect here. I mean, he's a young prospect as well, 24 years old, and he's facing an aging vet in Eduardo at 37. So that comes to mind right away. But that being said, this should be a fun scrap. Both these guys like to stand and bang. Both these guys are very talented on the feet. I mean, Wood at age 24 fights beyond his years for sure. I mean, he's very composed out there. I mean, he's an excellent striker. He's got a tremendous amount of knockout power to go along with it. He's a current, by the way, I should say this right away too. He's a current Cage Warriors bantamweight champ, which means a lot because Cage Warriors has produced just an amazing, array of talent that's made its way over to the UFC and had extreme amounts of success, obviously, going through a lot of the fighters there. So, Wood is another one of these fighters coming over from Cage Warriors that should find a nice home here at 135 pounds and have success. Now, this first fight here again is going to be a test for him, even though he's a solid 3-1 favorite or so. Eduardo, I mean, is going to strike with him. Eduardo's a talented striker in his own right. And he's probably getting a little bit underrated here. But that being said, again, he's 37 years old. He's facing the young gun Wood that's going to come in facing, actually, he's coming off of 4 straight KO wins. in Cage Warriors. So that tells you this kid has dynamite in his hands. And he's got great low kicks as well. So Eduardo's going to have his hands full, even though Eduardo's a very technical striker. He's experienced, you know, obviously a lot more than Wood has throughout his career. And I don't think anything Wood throws at him other than the pure power landing on that aging chin could obviously have some effect. But I'm saying Eduardo should be able to adapt and we should have a fun fight here as well. So on the ground, both these guys, that's not really their strength, but they are game. You know, they do suffer sometimes from submission defense or lack of, I should say. I don't think we're going to see submissions here though as well. I think we're going to see again, both these guys kind of stifle each other on the ground a little bit and just keep the fight upright. And they're going to see who's the last man standing here. And I think it's probably going to be the young gun Wood. But again, this is going to be a nice test for him because Eduardo is an experienced solid vet that matches up fairly well with him. But with all that being said, I still trust Wood a little bit more on this spot because I do like the youth factor here and I do like the dynamite that he does have in his hands. And I think along the way, even if Eduardo is having some success on the feed, I think Wood gets through and eventually, puts Eduardo out. So my pick is Wood where the price is now almost 3-1 though. I think it's a little bit too dangerous to lay that kind of chalk. So either stay away or it's a dog or pass situation, but my pick is Wood.
Wood comes in with the wave of hype. He's got the nickname, the prospect. He clearly does have some serious power in his hands, but from watching him fight, I think that he can be a little over aggressive at times. And, you know, that did, and his chin could be questionable. I mean, it's only three fights ago that he did get knocked out. Now I know Johnny Eduardo, you know, got knocked out in his last fight, but that was a TKO on the ground. And I don't see Wood taking this fight to the floor. That's really not a big part of his game. I expect this fight between two talented strikers to be a stand-up contest. And a lot of people don't know this, but I think Johnny Eduardo was like a striking coach at Nova Uniao. I mean, this guy, he was the Muay Thai coach. He is a very talented, experienced, and knowledgeable striker. And when he stands with people, he's extremely dangerous. When Eddie Wineland stood with him, Wineland got knocked out. When Manny Gamburian stood with him, Gamburian got knocked out. He loses fights when people take him down. I mean, you look, it was Aljamain Sterling taking him down and submitting him. It was Matthew Lopez taking him down and getting a TKO. When people stand with him, they have trouble. Eduardo is an extremely accomplished counter striker. He has good striking defense. He's relatively accurate and he has some good pop in his hands. So, Wood needs to be careful here. I mean, yeah, Eduardo's getting up there in years. He's been in the UFC for 7 years and he's averaging less than one fight a year with how often he fights. But, this could be a trap fight for Nathaniel Wood. I think, Wood is dangerous and powerful. I mean, clearly his last two fights were just first round drubbings. But if he comes into this fight thinking that he's just going to steamroll Johnny Eduardo, I mean, he could be learning a valuable lesson. Johnny Eduardo has very strong Muay Thai and a very good counter-striking game. And if Eduardo can get that counter-striking and get Wood's timing down, I actually think Eduardo can win this fight, maybe even knock Wood out. So I'm actually going to side with the veteran here. I think that this is a trap fight, and I think Johnny Eduardo pulls it out. Now, dropping down to the strawweight division, we have Jessica Aguilar, who is 19-6, taking on Jody Esquivel, who is 6-3. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Aguilar opened -215, Esquivel +165. Right now, over at BetDSI, it's -130 for Aguilar. Esquivel is at +100, so even money on the other side of it. So line margins have tightened up. Everybody coming in on Esquivel early on. It's just mainly because of the aging factor. Again, we want to talk about, you know, people that are kind of past their primes and getting up there in age. So we're just talking about Eduardo being 37. Well, Aguilar's 36. And unfortunately for her, she was at one time, not long ago either, a few years back, she was definitely the number one fighter in her division. I mean, she was, you know, worldwide known as the best fighter at 115 pounds. So Jessica Aguilar is definitely a talented fighter and she deserved that ranking at that time as well. But since then, obviously the competition, level has gotten higher. The UFC obviously bringing the ladies over, Aguilar finally getting her shot into the UFC to prove things, but she's aging along the way. That's the problem. So she kind of made it over to the UFC a little bit too late, in my opinion, where, you know, she's past her prime at that point, obviously, as well. But that being said, I mean, they matched her up with Gadella. Gadella was put a beating on her, was able to, you know, beat her by decision in her last fight, Courtney Casey as well. So they haven't really fed her easy fights. And now, again, with Esquivel, this is definitely a step down in competition for Aguilar. And it's a winnable fight for her, honestly. But a lot of the same can be said with Esquivel. She's 32 years old, so it's not like she's a young gun by any means. But as far as MMA years, I mean, she's definitely lacks the experience that somebody like Aguilar has, or the fights that she's been wars throughout her, you know, her career years or whatnot. Esquivel does have a more extensive amateur career than pro career overall, I would say. Not than Aguilar, of course. I'm just saying for her, because she's only 6-3, I believe, as a pro. But that being said, she trains at a good camp. Esquivel does. She has some good boxing. She has some good power on the feet as well. So she's facing solid competition. So Aguilar, even though she's past her prime a little bit, you know, she's going to be game, and I think Esquivel is going to be game as well. So we're going to have a split decision type of fight. So again, the early action that came in and hit that plus 165 on Esquivel, I do understand it. That's why the price dropped a little bit, because we're probably going to look at a split decision type of fight if it hits a scorecards. Now, I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Aguilar, because I think she still is the more well-rounded fighter. I think Esquivel is going to need to completely keep this fight upright and try to outbox Aguilar and land the harder punches, which is possible here. But I think Aguilar will probably hang with Esquivel on the feet, and the difference maker here will be Aguilar getting the fight to the ground. Her wrestling at one time was pretty decent, and I still think she has enough in the tank to get some takedowns. And she obviously, she's got the technique and the experience to do so as well. So I think Aguilar is going to look for those takedowns. If she gets a takedown or two along the way, she could possibly finish Esquivel on the ground, because Aguilar has a good submission game to go along with it, or drop some ground and pound. And on the feet, it's going to be close enough that, with all that said, I lean a little bit more for the fight towards Aguilar. So I'm expecting a split decision type of fight, another hard one to bet, because again, the age factor here with Aguilar, you know, I mean, she's been in two very difficult fights so far in her UFC career. She's not getting any younger. But this is definitely a step down for in competition. So I'm going to go Aguilar here to get a very, very close decision win over Esquivel.
I could see this fight being close. I could also see it being a blowout. I mean, Esquivel is a savvy veteran that's been around the block and trains at Greg Jackson's, but she's not an elite fighter, but she probably has a small striking advantage over Jessica Aguilar. You know, Aguilar's striking has always been okay, but that's clearly never been her biggest strength. Her biggest strength is her ground game. She has good takedowns and very good submissions, which is so frustrating, because she was able to take Courtney Casey down repeatedly in her last fight, even though Casey is so big and strong in the women's strawweight division, and then she didn't do anything with it. She probably took more damage from Casey's up kicks at her legs than she did after getting the takedowns. So this time around, I mean, if she can take Casey down, she should be able to take Esquivel down. And if she takes Esquivel down, she needs to actually get on top position and do some work. So I think what happens here is Esquivel will get a slightly better, will slightly get the better of Aguilar on the feet, but Aguilar is going to get takedowns, and then she's going to ride those takedowns to at least win rounds. But there's going to be the possibility here for Aguilar to get a submission. I mean, Aguilar in her first two UFC fights had very tough opponents. You know, Courtney Casey's a fringe top 15 strong, one strawweight, and Claudia Gadelha is one of the best strawweights in the world. So I think, Aguilar is, yeah, getting older, but I mean, she still was one of the top strawweights in the world at one point. And I think that she still has that skill. Maybe she's lost a step. She's getting older. But, you know, Jody Esquivel isn't really a young gun here. So I think, you know, Jessica Aguilar should win this fight. I think that she does get the takedowns, and I think that her ground game does help her win this fight. So my pick is going to be Jessica Aguilar, potentially by submission. Now, kicking things off on the Fox Sports 1 preliminary card in the lightweight division, we have Desmond Green, who is 20-6. Taking on Gleison Tebow, who is 40-13. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Green open -185, Tibau at +145. And right now looking over at BetDSI, it's -300 for Green. Tibau is at +240. So opposite of the first few fights that we were talking about with the dogs getting bet down and the lines getting closer to pick them. This one is now a 3-1 favorite. So the favorite has gotten bet up a little bit more, actually coming in Green's way. And it seems to be the right way. I mean, if this was Tibau in his prime, obviously this wouldn't be the case. This wouldn't be the line either. But unfortunately, this seems to be a theme, at least early on in this card. We're seeing some of the aging vets get kind of fed to the younger fighters. I mean, like we said, Aguilar and Escobar in the last fight, yeah, you can argue that a little bit because they're both kind of getting a little bit older. But in this case here with Green, he's 28 years old. He's been around the sport for a long time, but he's now, I think, hit his stride. He's in the right division for him. I mean, he's obviously an explosive athlete that has gotten enough experience that he's, you know, he's really prone to make a UFC run here. And it could start with Tibau in this spot. I think they're kind of feeding him a bone as well. And typically you wouldn't say that about Tibau because he's a very difficult out. Tibau at one point was one of the best lightweights on the roster, but I mean, he's 34 years old now. Unfortunately for him, you know, USADA came in and just changed his life around. I mean, he got busted. He had some time off. You know, with USADA not being able, with the suspension that he suffered. And then of course injury set in as well. And then he comes back and he loses, three straight fights, I believe. So in his last fight against Makhachev, I mean, that was tough as well, seeing him get knocked out like he did. And I think we could see a repeat performance here against Green. Green is explosive enough that if he's able to stuff the takedowns, I know on the feet in Tibau's prime, it would probably be a competitive fight because Tibau has some boxing, has some powers along the way as well, but his chin's not going to be able to stand. I think in Green, again, I said they're feeding him a bone because, man, he stepped up when Prezeris missed weight bad in his last fight, still took the fight, performed well, lost a decision to just a tank of a man in Prezeris. So I think what we're seeing here, again, is an aging veteran getting fed to the wolves here in Green, and I think they expect Green to stuff the takedowns if Tibau's trying to get the fight to the ground and just be the more explosive fighter on the feet and probably knock him out. So that's why you're seeing the early action come in Tibau's or Green's way over Tibau. I think that the people kind of see the writing on the wall here, and they see the improvements Green's made, and it's basically a wrestler versus wrestler stylistic matchup here. Even though Tibau has some good jujitsu, I don't think he's going to be able to utilize that because Green's going to be able to stuff those takedowns and probably knock him out on the feet. I think at least that's how I think it goes. If you guys want to check something out, you could maybe take a glance over that total. It's right now, I believe, is 2.5 over -300. I think that's a little bit high, considering I think there is a good chance that Green repeats that performance and ends up knocking Tibau out. So maybe keep an eye on that under at the plus money. There might be some value there, but I am going to also pick Green to win. And I do think he probably knocks Tibau out. So if this goes to scorecards, though, it could be interesting because that means Tibau obviously survived long enough to make it interesting and grind out Green a little bit, maybe against the cage, slow the pace of the fight down and have a little bit of success. So if it does hit the scorecards, it'll probably be a competitive decision. But outside of that, I think Green probably does land one on the feet and get him out of there. So the pick is Green to win, probably inside the distance.
And Green is definitely the younger, more capable fighter at this point, but the one concern I do have here is, yeah, Green got overpowered by a bigger, stronger opponent in his last fight. And Gleison Tibau is a guy that cuts about as much weight to make the 155-pound division as anybody. So if Tibau has those explosive takedowns still, if he can put Des Green on his back, there's the chance that he can win this fight. I don't know if Tibau is going to want to spend a lot of time in the clinch, but I do think that if he can land a heavy double leg, then Green could find himself in a bit of trouble. In open space, Green is going to be the faster guy. Green is going to have some good pop in his hands. He has clearly the better chin at this point. So I definitely favor Green on the feet, but on the ground, I think Tibau should have the edge. So I'm a little concerned about that, and people might be discounting it just because Tibau's getting older and didn't look very good in his last fight. But if Tibau has kind of regained a little bit of a step after, because the last fight he returned after a long layoff due to a suspension, and if he's kind of figured things out a little bit, then he could present some trouble here for Green, because, you know, Green's takedown defense is good, but Tibau's takedown accuracy is pretty strong. So I'm a little concerned about that, but, like Nick said, Green being the younger, fresher guy, I think, and especially this is more of a hometown fight for him, he should have the edge. And I expect that not just that Green can win, but he might be able to finish Gleison Tebow over the course of three rounds. At some point, he could connect, and Tebow, being older and having some of the chin issues now, there is a good possibility that Green gets that first UFC stoppage after, I think, six straight decisions. So my pick is going to be Des Green, but just be a little bit careful about straight picking him and straight betting him. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Bilal Muhammad, who is 13-2, taking on UFC newcomer Chance Rencounter, who is 12-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Muhammad opened minus 400, Rencounter opened plus 280. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's still minus 400 for Muhammad. The comeback on Rencounter at plus 310, so solid line on the opener. Makes sense to me with Muhammad being a solid favorite. I mean, honestly, if you just want to look at this fight quickly as like a matchup compared to the past opponents real quick, I mean, Means, Meehan, and Randy Brown are all three better fighters than, unfortunately, Rencounter is for his sake here in this spot. And that's who we've seen Muhammad beat recently as well. So this is actually a step down in competition. Rencounter is stepping in here, taking this fight on short notice for Nico Price. So Muhammad has been training for somebody similar to Rencounter as well. And I guess I better get into what kind of fighter he is. Rencounter's not bad. I mean, I guess off the rip, I'm making him look bad, but you're seeing a solid line, a 4-1 dog for Rencounter for a reason here, because I mean, stylistically, like I said, Muhammad just beat three better fighters, and he was matched up with a better fighter than this as well. So, but Rencounter is a very long, well-rounded fighter. He's well coached, as you know, he trains with Alliance MMA, I believe, as well. He's capable of latching onto your neck and choking you out if you make a mistake with those long limbs. And I mean, he's got good fight IQ like that. He'll take advantage of a mistake on the ground. So he's got some submission skill, but he does have some good ground and pound once he gets top position. His wrestling's okay. It's not great. So it's hard for him to get it down to the ground sometimes. And I think he is going to struggle against Muhammad getting this to the floor as well. But, he is capable of landing some ground and pound and finishing the fight that way if he does get it to the ground. But more so than not, on the feet, typically he utilizes that length. He is a little bit dangerous. He's got some decent kicks, decent boxing on the feet as well. He does suffer from tall man's defense a little bit, though. I mean, he's susceptible to getting hit, and I think Muhammad is going to land, and he's by far the better striker on the feet. Now, if there's any concerns in this fight for Muhammad, to me, it's his chin. I mean, he is a bit chinny. He's been tagged. He's only been officially knocked out once in his career, but he has been dropped in multiple fights. And even though Rencounter, I think, is not as good of a striker as Muhammad, I still think he's capable of maybe landing something, obviously, along the way and rocking Muhammad. So Muhammad has to be cautious. He has to give Rencounter a little bit of respect in that department. But overall, honestly, I mean, like I said, if he got by Means, if he was preparing for an equal price, he should be more than ready to face Rencounter here in this spot. So it's a solid line for a reason. I don't see an upset happening here unless, like I said, he just catches him flush on the chin and Muhammad goes down here. Laying the price right now at 4-1, I wouldn't really recommend either. I think it's about right. So for me, it's a no-brainer here. You got to pick Muhammad. I would be surprised if he loses this fight. I think he probably, as the fight progresses, especially with Rencounter stepping in on short notice, maybe finishes along the way, but more so than not, I think it could go to the scorecards and we see a Muhammad 30-27 type of decision. So my pick is Muhammad. I'll just leave it at that. After this fight, if they match Rencounter well and he gets a full training camp, I think the kid could definitely I shouldn't say kid, he's 31 years old. He's actually older than Muhammad, but the guy can definitely win some fights in the UFC if matched right. But unfortunately for him, this isn't the matchup. So Muhammad's my pick to win.
Yeah, Rencounter enters this fight with a pretty decent height and reach advantage. The problem is he's really not a seasoned technical striker. I mean, if he was, then I would actually have favored him because, as Nick mentioned, Muhammad's biggest weakness is he doesn't have a very good chin. I mean, UFC debut against Joe Band, he got dropped repeatedly, and then he did get knocked out by Vicente Luque. But he's been on a really nice roll since that loss to Luque. Picking up quality win after quality win. He's a type of fighter that puts on a strong pace, mixes in some takedowns, and just wears his opponents down. I mean, he doesn't always get a stoppage, but he just can grind out fights. And he has some quality boxing. So even though Rencounter has the reach and the size, I think Muhammad shouldn't have too much of an issue getting inside and kind of forcing this to be a phone booth fight on the feet where Muhammad is able to connect regularly. Rencounter's biggest strength typically is getting top position on the ground where he can either work over submissions or get ground and pound. And Muhammad is very good with his takedown defense. I mean, he's at 85, almost 86% takedown defense. And I just don't think Rencounter's offensive wrestling is even close to good enough to crack that. So I think this fight stays standing. I think it only goes to the ground if Muhammad takes it down, and Muhammad should be in control of it pretty much from bell to bell, with the only chance for Rencounter being landing that one big shot on the feet, which is possible, but I think with Rencounter not being as good of a striker, I think it's unlikely. So I'm going to side with Bilal Muhammad. Now dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Nick Lentz, who is 38-2 with one no contest, taking on David Tamer, who is 7-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Tamer opens minus 265, the comeback on Lentz plus 185. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's currently Tamer minus 300, the comeback on Lentz plus 240. So a little bit more action coming in Tamer's way. I do get it. I understand it, man. I'll tell you what, I've been nothing but impressed with David Tamer since he came off the Ultimate Fighter show. The work he's put in, the ability that he has, he's one of my favorite strikers to watch in all of the UFC on the roster, period. I mean, the guy is definitely talented. He's accurate. He's got power. He's got good footwork. He's just got clean technique, everything about him. I mean, it's a thing of beauty to watch on the feet. And his takedown defense has gotten excellent as well along the way. He's hard to control, hard to get down. So he's able to utilize what he does best, and that's strike with people. So most people at lightweight are going to have a difficult time, and he's proven that, you know, already striking with David Tamer. So the guy is legit. And, you know, I think Lentz is basically a stepping stone for him. And I have nothing but respect for Nick Lentz. He's been around the UFC, as we all know, for a long time, and he's faced who's who, you know, as far as the lightweight roster, even a featherweight as well. He's been, you know, back and forth a little bit there, and he's had plenty of success. And the guy is a difficult out because he's tough as nails. He's hard to finish out there. He's got a ton of heart. Typically speaking, his conditioning is very solid. You know what you're going to get with him. He comes to fight. He comes to grind you out. He comes to knock you out. He comes to choke you out. So Lentz is a very dangerous opponent. It's not going to be an easy fight at all for Tamer here. He's definitely going to be in a test, but I think it's a test he can pass. And I do think that what happens here is he beats Lentz up. Lentz is going to come in, try to strike with him a little bit, start getting tagged. He's going to actually look to take this fight to the ground. He's not going to be able to do so. And then he's just going to get kind of picked apart, busted up a little bit. Probably not finished, but that's a possibility here with Tamer. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised anybody steps in with Tamer that gets finished in this cage. I mean, that's how good his striking can be. So I just think it's a tough matchup for Lentz. He's, you know, he's going to try to grind this fight out, but he's going to get picked apart while he's doing so. So should be another good test for Tamer, and I'm looking forward to seeing what this guy could do if they keep on matching him up right. So I like this matchup for him. I think he does beat Nick Lentz, and he moves on. So again, at the price though, it's a tad high right now. I mean, you know, minus 300 or so over the stylistic matchup with, you know, a very game Nick Lentz that's faced a lot of good competition throughout his career. It's another tough spot to bet where the number is now. It got bet up to an okay spot. So I think it's very difficult to bet. But that said, the pick is still Tamer here in the spot. I think he does come away with a win, which will be another solid step towards where he wants to be.
Yeah, this is an interesting fight. I mean, both of these guys were actually scheduled to fight other people. We had Tamer originally supposed to fight Don Madge at Liverpool last week, and then Nick Lentz was supposed to fight Leonardo Santos, but both of their opponents ended up not working out, and then they matched them up together here. So I think this is an interesting and intriguing fight. I'm actually really surprised it's not on the main card, especially with the way Nick Lentz pulled off a huge shocker in his last fight against Will Brooks with that guillotine choke, and how impressive David Tamer has been thus far in his lightweight run. I mean, he's clearly knocking on the door for the top 15. And you know, really not getting much attention. But in this fight, it's going to boil down to whether or not Nick Lentz can get takedowns and keep Tamer on his back. Because on the feet, David Tamer is going to be lighting Nick Lentz up. This guy is an elite striker. He has just spectacular credentials. He has great awareness of distance. He mixes things up really well. I mean, he is just a handful. I mean, because Tamer has faced some pretty good strikers, like with Lando Vannetta, and I mean, he made him look silly. So I think that this is going to be a very difficult fight for Nick Lentz unless he can drag it to the floor. I mean, Nick Lentz is come from a wrestling background. That's where he's had his most success in his MMA career, is getting fights to the floor, getting top position, looking for ground and pound or submissions. And if he cannot get that going, I mean, this is going to be painful. So, I think Lentz is going to be game. He's going to be actively looking for takedowns, but unless he can set them up properly, it's going to be very difficult for him to actually get them, because, Tamer has surprisingly good takedown defense. I mean, Vannetta tried to get him down close, repeatedly tried to get him down, and they just couldn't do it. And I do think that Lentz is the better wrestler of all those fighters, but with Lentz being unable to set up the takedown, I think it's going to be a lot more difficult. So I do think that David Tamer lands some big shots here, and I think that he does win this fight, but you do have to be a little bit cautious in case Nick Lentz is able to get a hold of him. But my pick is going to be David Tamer. Now, moving on to the main event of the preliminary card, we have Cesara Eubanks, who is 3-2, taking on Lauren Murphy, who is 10-3 in the women's flyweight division. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Eubanks opened -190, the comeback on Murphy at +150. Right now, over at BetDSI, we're seeing it is Eubanks -170. The comeback is +140 on Murphy. So line margins have tightened up. There is two-way action in this fight early on. It did drop. Now we're starting to see it climb back towards Eubanks as well. And it's a tough one. Another split decision type of fight, in my opinion, because I do see, you know, why Eubanks should be favored. I've been nothing but impressed. If you just look at the resumes overall, I mean, you know, you're seeing her record and she's almost a 500 fighter. You're saying, oh man. I mean, why is this girl even favored? In fact, I think on Tapology, she's listed as 2-2 possibly as well. So, but she's better than that, obviously. And that's inaccurate. I mean, if you look back at her amateur career as well, and then the fights that she had in the Ultimate Fighter House, Eubanks is definitely a good fighter. She comes from a grappling, wrestling type of background, of course, but she's rounded out her game to the point where her boxing is pretty nice. Definitely nice to look at. She's, because her technique is smooth. She moves well. She's fast. She's accurate. So her boxing is definitely getting better fight by fight. She's getting more confidence. She's getting good training, of course, as well. So there's a lot to like about Eubanks in this fight. And that's why she's a slight favorite over somebody that's tough as nails like Murphy. I tell you what, Murphy's been underrated throughout her whole career. She's coming off a very solid win. And a very competitive fight. I mean, you know, against Hanchak, I think a lot of people were surprised that she got that W, but Murphy's a grinder. I mean, she comes to fight. She's in your face. She has some underrated wrestling in her own right. Her takedown defense is pretty solid as well. So she's going to bring it, and Eubanks is going to have probably one of the toughest fights in her career here. So I think this is the type of fight that if it hits the scorecards, we're going to see a split decision, and it should hit the scorecards. So it's another one of those, fights, because like I said, I think I give the slight edge to Eubanks, and I'm going to pick her to win because I do like her boxing a little bit better. I think she's faster. She's going to be landing a little bit more frequent and a little bit more clean along the way. But Murphy is going to kind of ugly this fight up a little bit, and she's going to make it, like I said, she's going to make it tough as well. And I could also see Eubanks kind of stealing a takedown or two along the way. It isn't going to be easy. I know that some ladies have had success against Murphy getting her down, and Eubanks has that wrestling background, but I still think it's going to be difficult to get Murphy down and control her that easy. But that being said, I do think Eubanks still put it all together enough that she ends up outpointing Murphy and getting a close decision win. So, looking forward to this fight, and I'm going to pick Eubanks to get the competitive decision win.
Yeah, looking at this fight, the biggest issue here is whether or not Eubanks is going to make weight. I mean, that was a big problem for her on the Ultimate Fighter season, and then it was clearly a huge problem for her after the show because she was supposed to be fighting for the belt, and then she couldn't make weight. So, is she going to make weight? Has she kind of turned it into a science? Is she in really good shape? That is the big question mark here. She is a very big, strong, flyweight, but I mean, Lauren Murphy was a former Invicta bantamweight champion, and she really hasn't had any issues dropping down to the flyweight division. Murphy is physical. She is at her absolute best when she can get top position and then just start dropping bombs, and doing some serious damage with ground and pound. Her problem is she doesn't have very good takedown accuracy at 33%, and Eubanks is a pretty strong ground fighter. So, I think if Murphy does try to get this to the floor, Eubanks is going to, you know, be a bit annoying for her. I mean, Eubanks has a strong submission game. She could try to sweep Murphy. Like, Murphy really isn't the most technical fighter. She's just physical, has a lot of heart, and, you know, she's one of those gritty type fighters that, can wear you down and just try to, you know, put a hurting on you. She's not somebody that's going to be landing, you know, really slick counter strikes and, spinning wheel kicks or anything. I mean, she's going to try to walk you down, get you, you know, kind of pinned against the fence, work for takedowns, try to get to a position. And on the feet, Murphy is a bit stiff. So I think Eubanks should have the edge there. And, I think that this fight's going to be close. I mean, Murphy has the potential to be a player in this division. It's just all about whether or not she can really impose her will on her opponents. And she was not quite able to do that on the Ultimate Fighter season. And, she did grind out a close fight against Barb Honchak, but, you know, Eubanks is a much better athlete than Murphy. So, I'm a bit concerned about that. I think this fight's going to be close, but I think Eubanks is going to do enough damage on the feet, and she might threaten enough on the ground as well. So this fight could go either way. I would not be shocked if Murphy grinds this out, but I think Eubanks will land some good shots in the stand-up, really back Murphy off potentially. And I think that as long as Eubanks makes weight, then this is potentially her fight to win. So my pick is going to be Eubanks. Now moving on to the Fox Sports 1 main card, we have John Volante, who is 16-9, taking on Sam Alvey, who is 32-10 with one no contest. And this is in the light heavyweight division. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Alvey open -190, the comeback on Volante at +150. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's -146 for Alvey. The comeback is +116 on Volante. So a lot of margins have tightened up, and Volante money did come in as the line was set a little bit high. It's a tough fight, though. I'll tell you what, especially, well, let's talk about first things first is, I guess, the fact that this fight is at light heavyweight. I mean, Alvey stepped up recently and took a fight at light heavyweight as well. And that's kind of why he's, you know, staying at light heavyweight, because he actually, after his win, he called out Volante here. They asked him what he wanted next, and he said, hey, Volante, let's do it. Your house, my house, wherever the case may be, let's just match it up and let's fight. So he's getting his wish here, the UFC hooking him up in Volante's backyard. So this is at light heavyweight. Obviously, the bigger, stronger fighter is going to be Volante. Not by much. I mean, as far as height goes and reach goes, they're going to be pretty similar overall. But physically, Volante should have a little bit of a power advantage. So this is an interesting fight because obviously, we know Volante has a lot of talent, has a lot of potential. He just hasn't lived up to any of it. The guy's a very solid wrestler, very hard to take down. He's got knockout power on the feet, decent striking along the way as well. So Volante, there's a lot of good things to like about him, but the problem is his conditioning. I mean, more times than not, he lets you down. He does fade as fights go on. His defense, his striking defense, a lot of times he likes to block with his face, which is never a good thing. He's tough, but eventually, you know, you get through and his chin is starting to go a little bit more and more as we see his career progressing. So he needs to tighten up that defense a little bit, and his conditioning has to be on par for him to win fights usually. So Alvey, we know that's not the case with him, meaning he shows up, he's ready to go three rounds. There's no question about it. Even on short notice, I mean, the guy comes to fight always. He wants this fight, so he must think he can exploit Volante's weak defense with his knockout power and get him out of there, especially as the fight progresses. I wouldn't be surprised if that is the case here with Alvey, maybe utilizing that. But the problem I have with Alvey is that his ability to kind of stay active and keep his foot on the gas and not let fighters dictate the pace and keep him against a cage and just sit there sometimes. That's what the problem is with Alvey. He needs to kind of be a little bit more aggressive and let his hands fly a little bit more often. He likes to sit back and kind of counterpunch, and he does have success though. You can't blame him there because he has so much success with that one punch knockout power that he possesses. At times I think he gets a little bit too dependable on that. That's why if he doesn't get rid of his opponent, sometimes you'll see him lose a decision on the cards. So this is a tough fight to call because of that. I think if Vellante does not get knocked out, if he does make it to the scorecards, he probably outpoints Alvey along the way because he's going to be a little bit more active as far as striking goes. He's going to probably be pushing Alvey and holding him against a cage a little bit more as well. So he'll be controlling the tempo of the fight. But it only takes one shot to get through from Alvey to land it and knock Vellante out, and it could happen as well. So I'm kind of going back and forth on this fight. We'll see how the weigh-ins play out as well, and we'll see if I change my mind. But for right now, I'm going to lean a little bit more towards Alvey to win this fight because I do think that he could probably land that one punch, and that might all it takes to knock Vellante out as it goes. So as always, though, I'm going to put a disclaimer out there. Make sure for Brian's picks and my picks, check out MMAOddsBreaker.com, our staff picks on fight day as they're posted, because that's where our final picks are actually posted at. So we could, after weigh-ins, change our minds about this fight or any fight on the card here, obviously. It's important to make sure everybody makes weight and everything's still the way you kind of expect it to be before you make your final decision. That's why we do that. But that being said, right now I'm going to pick Alvey to win the fight. I think, he has a good chance of actually getting that shot in and maybe putting Vellante out. But if not, it's Vellante by decision. So maybe it's a prop bet for this fight. Alvey inside the distance or Vellante on the cards. We'll see. That being said, Alvey's my official pick.
Yeah, this fight, there's really two ways it could go. John Vellante being slightly bigger, slightly longer, and the more active fighter. He could outwork Sam Alvey. Sam Alvey has a bad tendency of sitting back and letting his opponent dictate the pace. And if Vellante is just able to push forward and force Alvey on his back foot over the course of three rounds, then Vellante could definitely take a decision here. I think Alvey's chin is sturdy enough that he'll be able to withstand Vellante's power. Although, Alvey did get knocked out by Derek Brunton. So, it's not out of the realm of possibility that Vellante can win by TKO or knockout. But, on the other side, Sam Alvey has nasty fight-ending power. This guy has a lethal right hand, and if John Vellante isn't protecting his chin enough, Sam Alvey can find a home for that hand. And Vellante has been knocked out multiple times in the past, so the other issue is Vellante slows down. So I think what's going to be a big issue here is if Vellante can work from the outside and land his low leg kicks. I think those will be very important for him to at least win a decision. If he can slow Alvey down, kind of take away some of that explosion where Alvey likes to step forward and try to crack you with the right hand. So that could make it a little bit easier for him. And then also, if Alvey is just a little bit more aggressive. If Alvey turns up the aggression, I think that this is his fight to lose. He has the power and the confidence to stand with Vellante. I think, Alvey called him out. He thinks this is a winnable fight for him, and it might be. Vellante is going to be fighting a bit more in his backyard, but I don't think that'll really matter with Alvey being, from the U.S. as well. So this fight's going to boil down to whether or not Sam Alvey can really land that big shot, because I think Alvey will have a difficult time winning a decision. But if he hurts Vellante, I can definitely see him finishing this fight. So I'm going to side with Sam Alvey. I think that he does connect with that big right hand. I think he does finish this fight by TKO or knockout. But if he doesn't, don't be shocked to see John Vellante leg kick his way and just kind of slowly outwork a frustrated Sam Alvey over the course of three rounds. But my pick is going to be Sam Alvey. Now, dropping down to the featherweight division, we have Julio Arce, who is 14-2, taking on Daniel Tamer, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
RSA opened minus 230. The comeback on Tamer at plus 170. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's minus 210 for RSA. The comeback on Tamer is at plus 165. So line margins have tightened up. There is two action in this fight as well. Line dropped. Tamer got bet early on, and now we're seeing RSA get bet back a little bit as well. This is another tough one to call in a way, because I like this fight a lot. I think it will be very exciting. I mean, Tamer, obviously, he's David's brother. This is Daniel Tamer. Coming through that bloodline, boy, the Tamer brothers like to throw bombs, and they could fight, especially on the feet. They are fun to watch. But the difference between Daniel and David, David has a little bit better conditioning, and I think David is a better fighter of the two. I mean, Daniel in his debut against Danny Henry ended up gassing out. He had a very good round one. He definitely won the first round, but then after that, you could see him slowing down noticeably. And then obviously in the second round, Henry started taking over to the point where Tamer was lucky to survive and lose a decision and not get finished in that fight. But credit to his heart and his toughness to hang in there. And I'm sure we'll see a little bit better in his second fight. I mean, that was his UFC debut, so I'll cut him some slack there. But the problem here for Tamer is Arce is a heck of a fighter. I mean, Arce is a special talent in a lot of ways. He's only 28 years old, so he's getting to that point where, you know, he's obviously he's got some man strength at this point right now too at age 28, but he's got all that experience going his way as well outside of the UFC. He's faced solid competition on the regional scene, and he's had success. And you can see fight by fight the improvements that this guy has made. His striking ability is what stands out the most. It's a thing of beauty. He's very technical, very clean, very accurate, very powerful. But he does have a well-rounded game. I mean, he can wrestle. He can submit you. You know, he can grind you out a little bit. He has good ground and pound as well. So he's a very complete fighter, again, facing solid competition and is battle-tested. So he was ready to make his UFC debut. And since then, I mean, you know, I think from the contender series and then the official UFC fight that he had at 220, he's, you know, getting better fight by fight as well. So it's been fun to watch his growth as a fighter. And I think that you're going to continue to see that against Tamer here in this next fight. And I think what's going to happen, he's going to have to kind of weather this first round storm that Tamer's going to bring. And he knows that as well. So what's going to happen? Tamer's going to come out, look to knock his head off. But Arce has good defense. Like I said, his technical skill set on the feet, it's not going to be easy for Tamer to do that. In fact, the counter punches Arce throws back is going to be tougher Tamer to handle, I think, along the way. And then especially if this gets into round two and round three, then we're really going to see Arce step it up. And I don't think Tamer's going to have what it takes to survive in this spot if he does gas as bad as he did last time. So I like what I see in Arce. I know he's a solid 2-1 favorite, but I do think that it's justified and it's right, because I do think that he's going to come in here, and even though he's facing a dangerous opponent, he's going to clearly be the better fighter of the two. And I think if the UFC keeps on matching him right, I mean, we could see a potential contender coming out here in Julio Arce. So I think he's, again, the hype behind him is definitely justified, and he's a fighter to watch moving forward. So this should definitely be one of the best fights of the night, because these guys are going to be slinging some leather, and I'm looking forward to watching it. So my pick is Arce. I think he does get the job done, and I think it might be by stoppage, maybe round two, round three, as Tamer does start to let up and gas a little bit. But Tamer does have a ton of heart, so this is going to definitely be a fun war to watch.
Yeah, in Tamer's debut, I mean, he was looking so good in the first round, and then he just slowed down drastically, and he just got the crap kicked out of him in the next two rounds, ended up losing a one-sided decision. If that happens here against Arce, I think Arce has the ability to finish Tamer. You know, that being said, you know, Daniel Tamer has the nickname Kid Dynamite for a reason. I mean, he is an aggressive, an entertaining striker, just like his brother. So there's a possibility that he could pull off this upset. Tamer has a very diverse striking skill set, great kicks, heavy hands, and he's active. So I would not be shocked to see him go out there and win the first round. And if he wants to win this fight, he might have to finish Arce early. That being said, Arce is well-rounded. He has a solid jiu-jitsu game. He has a very active and aggressive striking game. And while I don't think that Arce is quite as technical as Tamer, he has the ability to sustain his attack over the course of three rounds, while Tamer really slowed down drastically in his UFC debut after the first. Even it wasn't even all the way through the first that he started to slow down. So I think also that Tamer does not have a great chin. So he has heart by being able to survive after he did slow down and took a beating. But I think with Arce having some good power and some solid overall boxing, over the course of three rounds, Arce should clearly win this fight. But he just has to be careful early, because that's when Tamer's going to be the most dangerous. You know, he has that explosion, he has that power, and he has some very strong kicks. So if Arce's not respecting Tamer, then he might be punished for it. But overall, I just think Arce's the better fighter here. And as long as he respects Tamer's ability in that first round, then this is his fight to lose. So I think UFC put this fight on the main card to kind of showcase Arce's ability, and also because they expect Tamer to really bring the fight early. So I think Arce takes it, and potentially by TKO in the third round. Now moving up to the welterweight division, we have Jake Ellenberger, who is 31-13, taking on Ben Saunders, who is 21-9-2. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Ellenberger opened -210, the comeback on Saunders at +160. And right now over at BetDSI, it's -200 for Ellenberger, the comeback on Saunders at +160. So looks like it's a pretty solid opener and staying steady. It's been two-way action coming back and forth as well on this fight. It's a tough one, though, man. I tell you what, I think it's a tad bit high, to be honest with you. Just because I don't know how much you could trust either guy right now. I mean, you have a 33-year-old in Ellenberger that's way beyond that in MMA years. You have a 35-year-old in Saunders that's way beyond that in MMA years as well. Two guys definitely that have been outstanding fighters throughout their careers, especially in the welterweight division, what they've accomplished, who they beat. I mean, finishers. Both these guys can finish. I mean, Ellenberger is known for his knockout power, just nastiness. At one point, he was one of the most explosive, dynamic strikers in the welterweight division. I mean, he was in line for a title shot. So that's where he was in his prime for sure. But unfortunately for him, he's past his prime. I know he still has the desire to get back on top in the world to win, which you got to love. But, you know, at age 33 and the fight years that he's been through, he just doesn't have what he did when he was in that prime spot. So, you know, not his fault, but his chin just can't take it. What it did before. I mean, he had a pretty solid chin at one time, but now, unfortunately for him, it's let him down. And Saunders is probably the worst chin out of the two. But that being said, Saunders offensively does present some problems because his length, and he does have some knockout power to go along with it as well, especially his knees, his clinch work, his kicking game as well. Ellenberger's going to have to be cautious on the feet a little bit if he doesn't want to get clipped and knocked out. That being said, getting into Saunders a little bit more, I mean, a lot of the same things I said about Ellenberger aging, I mean, Saunders has been through wars throughout his career as well. Again, he's a finisher. He's capable of knocking people out. His clinch work is amongst the best, I mean, that you'll see out there. It's just his tie plumb with his knee attack is just a thing of beauty to watch. But that being said, he's got tall man's defense. Strikes get through. He gets clipped. That fight that he had with Joe Man not long ago was a pretty fun fight to watch, but it was brutal, man. I mean, he took a beating in that fight, and he's coming off that fight into this fight against another heavy hitter as well, in Ellenberger. Even though Ellenberger's past his prime, he still has enough knockout power to make things interesting here as well. So, in my opinion, you really can't be confident either way completely in this fight, because I think both of these guys can finish each other, and you can't trust too much in either guy right now. So is it smart to lay 2-1 on Ellenberger as chalk even if he wins? I don't think so. I think you stay away from this fight, or it's a dog or pass situation again with Saunders, because Saunders might be able to finish Ellenberger as well. So not a lot of confidence out there. I do have respect for both fighters, though. I mean, like I said, throughout their careers, they've been great, and it's amazing that they're still performing at a decent level at this age and what they've been through. But I just can't trust them either way right now. So I'm going to pick Ellenberger to win. I just think he is a little bit better right now than Saunders, and I think he is a little bit more dangerous at this point in this matchup, but not a confident pick at all. I mean, it is what it is, but it's like I said, it's just kind of hard to trust either one of these guys right now. But the pick is Ellenberger, and we'll see how it plays out.
Yeah, if this fight had taken place a couple years ago, I would say Jake Ellenberger easy, because you know, he had the confidence, and he had that just devastating knockout ability where he would just explode forward with a heavy right hand, and he just trusted his hands. He's not quite nearly as confident as he used to be. I mean, especially after some of the horrific TKOs he's taken over the years, getting knocked out by Mike Perry, knocked out by Jorge Masvidal, losing that decision to Tarek Saffiedine, and then also the knockout to Stephen Thompson. I mean, his only win in his last five fights was a shocking knockout of Matt Brown, which, you know, is an impressive one of absolutely, but, you know, Ellenberger has not been on the top of his game, but neither has Ben Saunders. I mean, Saunders has lost by knockout his last two fights as well. So, you know, basically have four straight knockout losses heading into this main card matchup. Ellenberger has a clear wrestling edge, but Saunders has that really strong rubber guard game and a very adept Brazilian jiu-jitsu skill set where, you know, he's won fights by omoplata. He was the first guy in the UFC to win a fight by omoplata. So I do think that on the ground, Saunders can be crafty enough to potentially fluster Ellenberger. So I expect this fight to stay standing. Saunders will have a 6-inch reach advantage, and he's actually 5 inches taller than Ellenberger, but that's not going to matter if Ellenberger still trusts his hands, because Ellenberger does have the type of power to end fights against almost anybody. His problem is he doesn't have a very good chin, and he doesn't have and he hasn't had the greatest conditioning. But against Ben Saunders, I don't think Ellenberger will be in too much trouble, because Saunders really isn't that dangerous with his hands. Where he's most dangerous is with his kicking game and with his, like, elbows, his joints, the knees, the elbows, the Muay Thai. If Ellenberger goes into an extended clinch battle with Ben Saunders, I would be absolutely floored, because that is Ben Saunders' wheelhouse. That's where he's most dangerous. But in open space, even though Saunders does have the reach advantage and a pretty good kicking game, I think that's where Ellenberger wants to keep it. I think Ellenberger wants to be able to step forward and land that huge shot. And if he does, I think Ben Saunders will not be able to take it. You know, he just does not have the durability. I mean, neither does Ellenberger, but Ellenberger hits way harder than Saunders. So for Saunders, it's more of that accumulation, landing repeated elbows. He's not going to land that crazy spinning elbow or whatever like Mike Perry did against Ellenberger. So I think that this is actually a decent matchup for Ellenberger, and I think that he can pick up a quality victory here, probably by knockout in the first round. So my pick is going to be Jake Ellenberger. Now moving up to the heavyweight division, we have Walt Harris, who is 10-7, taking on Daniel Spitz, who is 6-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Harris open -260, Spitz at +180. Right now, looking over at BetDSI, it's -275 on Harris. The comeback on Spitz +225. So line margins again have tightened up, but there is two-way action in this fight as well, with a little bit more action coming in Harris's way, but I'm sure we'll see some Spitz action coming back in as well. Surprising to some, but not to me that much as well, because both these guys are a tad bit, well, I don't want to say Spitz is overrated, but Harris is probably a little bit overrated at this point as well. But that said, he is definitely the more athletic, the more explosive, the more powerful fighter of the two, for sure. Strength wise, he's going to have some, well, I don't want to say physical size, because actually Spitz is the taller fighter, longer fighter. He's going to have the reach advantage here, but Harris is still the stronger fighter of the two. And I think the speed difference is going to come into play here a little bit. As far as wrestling ability go, that's going to be interesting. I know Harris offensively at times can get you down on the floor, but here he's going to want to probably stand up and try to bang with Spitz a little bit. That being said, I think Spitz is probably a more complete fighter of the two. I think Spitz is, has a better ground game. He's got better wrestling. I don't know if he's going to be able to take Harris down. Harris's takedown defense is solid, but I guarantee the Spitz probably looks to go that route a little bit, as he should in this fight, because Harris on the ground has proven to be vulnerable. I'm not just talking about Fabricio Werdum beating him, of course. I mean, that's not, you know, far-fetched at all, but I'm saying if Spitz wants to make this fight a little bit easier, possibly explore the ground a little bit here as well. But outside of that, I was kind of impressed with Spitz's last performance against Anthony Hamilton. I mean, he looked to be in a little bit better physical shape, Then his UFC debut loss to Godbeer. So that's a step up. I think Spitz, you know, coming in off of a win and getting his confidence back a little bit now that he's settled into the UFC, probably performs a little bit better. And if his conditioning is better than it was in that Godbeer fight, then it should get interesting because both these guys do tend to slow. Harris has slowed down the pass as well. He can go three rounds. I get it, but it will get interesting as this fight goes a little bit. And Spitz probably has a better chin of the two as well. So this is going to be an interesting fight, and the line probably is a tad high. So it's definitely a dog or pass situation, and there might be some value on the dog here as it stands right now as well. So that said, it's hard for me to pick him, though, because of what I've seen, especially outside of round one. Spitz is going to have to utilize some decent footwork that he's shown. He's going to have to be on his bicycle a little bit more and look to counter and look to land some heavy shots against Harris along the way, and then keep it up for three rounds, where Harris has kind of proven to me that he is a little bit better still to this point. So even though I did like what I saw with Spitz and the Anthony Hamilton fight, it was just a little bit too quick. I wish it would have maybe played out and gotten round two, round three. We would have seen, you know, what Spitz was made of, you know, against a higher level fighter in that spot, rather than knocking him out in, I believe, like 24 seconds or something that, you know, that he knocked Hamilton out. So still some question marks surrounding Spitz, in my opinion. So I'm going to pick Harris to win, but it's not a confident pick here either, because like I said, I think that Spitz is probably a bit underrated in this spot, and he does have a few paths to victory. He could land a shot. Harris doesn't have a great chin, so Spitz could land a shot on the feet, and he could beat him on the ground as well. So there is a path to victory there, but common sense says Harris should win the striking battle and probably hurt Spitz along the way. So I'm going to lean with Harris. We'll see what the weigh-ins look like, and we'll see how it goes.
And I'm going to go Harris as well. I mean, Spitz is going to be the slightly taller, the taller fighter with the longer reach. And if he can keep Walt Harris at the end of his reach, then he could be in a good position. The problem is, when Spitz actually took on a fighter with even reasonable striking credentials in Mark Godbeer, who is, you know, not a cream of the crop heavyweight by any means, you know, he got outworked and he, you know, ran out of gas a little bit, and Mark Godbeer easily won a decision against him. So in Walt Harris, a guy that I think has way more power, is able to step inside and do way more damage, and someone that has a diverse enough striking skill set, I think Walt Harris has the ability to really do some damage to Daniel Spitz. Harris does not have the greatest chin, so if Spitz can connect with a heavy straight punch as Harris is on his way in, then that could absolutely set up a victory here for Spitz. You know, we really don't know what we have in Spitz yet, because that UFC debut was atrocious, but then he looked like a world beater against Anthony Hamilton. That being said, Anthony Hamilton has really had a rough go of it in the UFC heavyweight division, and there's a lot of guys that could finish Anthony Hamilton in 20 seconds. So if Spitz can beat Walt Harris here, then I think we'll have a better understanding of where he's at in the heavyweight division. But where it is now, I think Walt Harris is the better fighter of the two. I think Spitz might need to get this fight to the floor if he wants to win it, because Harris is going to be aggressive, pushing forward and looking to land some big bombs. And I just don't know if Spitz's defense is going to be good enough or his conditioning. So I'm going to side with Harris, but Spitz could surprise me. Now, dropping down to the lightweight division, we have Gregor Gillespie, who is 11-0, taking on Vince Pichel, who is 11-1. Now, Nick, where did this fight open, and how has the public shifted things so far?
Gillespie opened minus 230, the comeback on Pichel plus 170. And right now, looking over at BetDSI, it is currently Gillespie at minus 455, the comeback on Pichel at plus 355. So needless to say, where the action came in early on, it was all Gillespie. A tough line to set, though, because I think that you got to respect Pichel out there from what he's accomplished, from, you know, his experience and the improvements he's made. I know he had some time off recently, but he's come back and he's performed relatively well from, you know, that couple years layoff or whatever he had before that previously. So his wins over Damian Brown, his win over Silva in his last fight were pretty impressive. And I think that he needed to get back on track and he needed to prove to the world that he can still be relevant and still win some quality fights along the way, because Pichel is a very well-rounded fighter in his own right. He's got good striking, nice boxing. He has some power to go along with it. Pretty solid takedown defense he's always had. I know if you look at his takedown defense, I believe on Fightmetric or whatnot, it's not that great, but a lot of it was from his fight against Khabibov. Khabibov was able to take him down, suplex the crap out of him in that fight, and that's how he ended up knocking him out, actually, by suplexes, for those of you guys who remember that. So I think a lot of that was based on, that particular fight where he just got manhandled there. But that being said, overall, in most cases, Pichel's takedown defense is solid. Now, it is going to get tested here against Gillespie, though. Gillespie is he's a talented prospect. I mean, the guy is hitting his groove. At first, I thought, of course, we all know that Gillespie comes from a wrestling background, an elite wrestling background, and what he's capable of. But I wasn't sure how that would translate and against, you know, the upper echelon, or, well, shouldn't say the upper echelon, because he's got a long way to go to face the top, you know, 5'10" guys or whatever in the UFC roster at 155 pounds. But against real competition in the UFC, how Gillespie's wrestling or how everything would translate. And it was okay early on. I mean, you could see that he wasn't a bad fighter when he made his official UFC against Franca, that you could see some potential in that, but you could tell he still had some holes in his game. But by his very next fight, knocking out Holbrook like he did, that was pretty impressive. But again, wasn't getting to see enough. I mean, okay, Holbrook, he has got a suspect chin. Gillespie got rid of him, you know, pretty quickly. But then backing it up against a very dangerous opponent like Gonzalez, that's what started impressing me the most. I mean, he's proven that he could handle, you know, weather the storm from some pretty aggressive fighters out there and do well. He was able to submit Gonzalez on the ground, and then he knocks out Rinaldi right after that. So Gillespie's getting better. His boxing is good. He's got power in his hands. He's getting more confident. He's getting more accurate with his striking as well. Obviously, he can always fall back on his wrestling in most cases and get the fight to the ground. And then his grappling ability, he's got good ground and pound. He's got some submission skills. So he's got everything you like to see in an improving fighter that's trying to make a run towards something special at lightweight. And that's exactly what Gillespie's doing. So you're seeing almost a 5-1 favorite over a very solid fighter like Pichel. That tells you what kind of respect Gillespie's getting from the betting community, and rightfully so. I mean, the guy is legit. He's really good, and I think he's going to be a nightmare matchup for Pichel. You know, you guys know me throughout the years. I've always had a lot of respect for Pichel, and I still do, but I think this fight here is going to be a tough one for him. He's going to have to keep it upright on the feet, and he's going to have to land some hard punches to keep Gillespie at bay, because I think Gillespie's going to be landing a little bit more frequently. He's going to be landing some powerful shots as well. And I think he's going to get through. And even if Gillespie can't manhandle him on the ground or, you know, win the fight on the ground that way, I think Gillespie's striking is at a point where he can win the fight solely based on his striking alone as well. So I just think stylistically, this is a difficult matchup for Pichel. And I think he's going to probably end up losing either on the scorecards or maybe even gets finished here, which would be, you know, tough to do for Gillespie, but it'd be a very impressive thing to do, because Pichel, I believe, officially has only been finished one time in his career, and that was because of those suplexes. So with all that being said, a very difficult fight and a good test for Gillespie. I'll tell you what, I'm impressed with the way UFC's handled his career as well. They're gradually giving him fights that he should win and he can improve on, and that's what they're doing. And this is another one. I think this is the next common sense step for him, is fighting a guy Pichel's level to see where he's at, because it's going to be a hard test. And if he passes it, they can keep on moving him up. So I think the UFC is matching him right, and I think the progress is going to be noticeable, and we'll see potentially Gillespie getting into that title shot mix in what is a star-studded, obviously, lightweight division. So he's got a long way to go, but I like what I see. So Gillespie's my pick to win, and hopefully it's an impressive type of performance from him.
While Vince Pichel has been able to pick up some big wins and is on quite a roll in the UFC lightweight division, I think this is actually a pretty rough matchup for him as long as Gillespie uses his wrestling. Pichel is not particularly good with his takedown defense. I mean, if you actually look, his takedown defense is only 17%. I mean, for the most part, that's because he's been the one initiating takedowns in fights. But against somebody like Gregor Gillespie, who has just elite wrestling credentials, I think that clearly Pichel is not going to be looking for takedowns here. He's going to be looking to stop him. And I just don't think he's going to be able to. You go back to Pichel's, one of his debut fights in the UFC, and Khabibov just ragdolled him, threw him around, suplexed him until he separated Pichel's shoulder and finished the fight. So, against somebody like Gregor Gillespie, who isn't a suplex master, but is an elite takedown artist, I think Gillespie is going to be able to put Pichel on his back and really put a hurting on him on the canvas. Because on the feet, Pichel's dangerous. He has good power. He has good aggression. He strikes at a high rate. He has decent accuracy. He has pretty good striking defense as well. So while Gillespie does have some pop in his hands, and maybe against a more submission-based fighter, Gillespie would want to keep this fight standing and try to just trade toe-to-toe and slug it out. But I think Gillespie would be playing with fire here if he did that. Pichel is dangerous. So if Gillespie plays it smart, he dumps Pichel on his back repeatedly and then just tries to wear him down and get a TKO from top position on the ground, similarly to what he did in his last fight. So I think this is definitely Gillespie's fight to lose, but if he does turn it into a slugfest on the feet, that's how Pichel has his chance, his path to victory, because Gillespie is not an elite striker. He does have power, but I wouldn't say that he's very technical. So I think if there's any chance for Pichel, that's where it is. But I think Gillespie plays it smart, and the gift gets this fight to the canvas. Now, this brings us to the main event of the evening. We have a bantamweight contest between top contenders Jimmy Rivera, who is 21-1, and Marlon Moraes, who is 25-1. Now, Nick, what's the MMA oddsmaker's perspective on this one?
Rivera opened -190, the comeback of Moraes at +150. Right now over at BetDSI, it's Moraes -118, the comeback of Rivera's -112. So line flipped to DSI, but across the market on the Donbass screen right now, Rivera's still a favorite for the most part. It's basically a pick'em fight with Rivera being about -115, -120s out there as well. So basically a pick'em fight, slight lean towards Rivera in most spots, but a DSI slight lean towards Moraes. This is a doozy. I know all of us are looking forward to this fight, probably one of the most anticipated fights of the year. I mean, the smack talk between both these guys before this fight actually happened. I mean, because we all know that this is one of those situations that you have two legit bantamweight title contenders going at it here. I mean, two elite fighters. And again, the smack talk, they have a little bit of a rivalry going on, and, you know, it's finally happening, basically. If you could check all that social media or whatnot as well, but to kind of see the background story of what happened. But pretty much it's on now, and we're going to see a heck of a fight. That's all that matters. It's a 5-round main event. I'm glad we're seeing it matched up this way, because I do think the winner of this fight can definitely claim his stake for a title shot. I mean, these are two of the best bantamweights in the world going at it right now, and the winner should move on and, you know, and be confident at potentially earning a title shot here. So getting into their stylistic matchups here, obviously Rivera has the wrestling background. He's got great striking to go along with it. He's explosive. He's fast. He's powerful. He's only has that one loss in his career, which Brian mentioned already. And that was early on in his career, obviously, as well. And he's performed amazingly. I mean, outside of the Ultimate Fighter loss that he had to Dennis Bermudez on the show, which actually he got caught. He was doing pretty good in the first round, then he got caught in a bad spot in the second round and got pounded out by Bermudez. But outside of that, I mean, he's just looked phenomenal, and he's had a great competition to go through as well. So this is another spot where, as his career progressed, you could see the improvements in Rivera's game. So he's an explosive fighter that is coming off a heck of a win over another talented striker in Almeida. Now, that was a very close fight. And to win that fight against Thomas Almeida, Rivera had to lean on his wrestling a little bit, which is very smart, because just a strictly stand-up affair. I mean, he was eating some punches, even though he had Almeida in trouble in that first round. Round two kind of changed the tone a little bit. Almeida had a little bit more success in that round. And Rivera did start utilizing his wrestling, and he ended up winning a close competitive decision, which he deserved. So that was a tough fight, but Thomas Almeida is very game. I'm bringing that up because Thomas Almeida is known for his striking, whereas Moraes is also known for his striking as well. Now, they're different types of strikers, but still Rivera ended up fighting smart. He handled a striker well, and even his striking, you know, against a striker was fun to watch. So this is a different matchup, like I said, though, against Moraes. And I think Moraes is actually a little bit more dangerous in some ways than Almeida was. Of course, Almeida's dangerous on the feet, and he's got an okay ground game. But I think Moraes has more options as far as, I mean, just overall skill set goes. Moraes, his kicks or a thing of beauty. I mean, whether it's to your legs, to the midsection, to your head, I mean, Moraes can hurt you, and he could do damage with his leg kicks wherever they may land. And not only that, he's got accurate punches with his boxing. He's got some speed to go along with it, and I think he mixes things up well enough with his knee attack, everything, his elbows. It's just you don't know what he's going to throw at you or what he's going to counter at you, and he lands and he does damage when he does so. And then not just that, though. If you look back even at his fight against Dotson recently, that was a pretty good fight. I felt that Moraes did deserve to get that nod. I mean, a lot of people felt it was a pretty close, controversial type of decision. I thought he should have won the fight, and he did win the fight, so I think it was a good call there. But why I'm even bringing that up is at the very end of that fight, he showed you what he's made of a little bit on the ground as well in that spot, because he got a guillotine choke in on Dotson, and then the bell sounded and the fight was over, and Dotson actually tapped right after that. So that guillotine choke was tight, and if Rivera gets caught up in something like that, you could see Moraes end up finishing a fight like that as well. So Moraes is a striker, but he can finish you on the ground as well. So in my opinion, I think if this fight plays out 5 rounds on the feet, which both these guys have decent enough takedown defense that we could see that happening, it's going to be a very close fight. I give the slight edge to Moraes on the feet. And if this fight doesn't play out that way, if Rivera is getting some takedowns along the way, I think Moraes is going to be able to put him in some tough positions, even on the ground as well, and maybe not keep him on the ground that long, at least to get back up to his feet. So I'm actually giving the slight edge to Moraes in this spot, but man, it should be a war. I mean, we're going to see this fight really be an MMA fight and try to take place in all areas, because I know Rivera is going to go for some takedowns. And now whether he has success or not, we'll see. But I think Moraes is going to be game, and he's going to be able to, utilize his strength and try to pick Rivera apart along the way. I also got to mention Moraes does have 5-round experience where Rivera does not. Now, I'm not saying Rivera can't go 5 strong. I think he can, but I mean, having that experience in your back pocket and knowing that you can go 5 rounds for Moraes doesn't necessarily hurt you either. So I love this fight. I think it's going to be exciting from bell to bell, or wherever it may end in between if that happens. But I'm going to slightly pick Moraes to win this fight. We'll see how the weigh-ins go as well. But I'm expecting a war, looking forward to a war, and I'm hoping it plays out as fun as I think it will. So my pick officially is going to be Moraes to pull off the win here.
Yeah, this is a dream matchup in the bantamweight division. Jimmy Rivera, I would say, has a very strong, steady boxing, and that's where he's going to be at his best. If he can kind of force this fight into the phone booth and really work over Moraes with steady, voluminous striking. He also has a wrestling base to fall back on, and he used that in his last fight against Thomas Almeida. So if the striking isn't going his way, don't be shocked to see Rivera shoot in for a double leg or something. Marlon Moraes, on the other hand, I mean, he is a diverse, dangerous striker. He has power with his hands and with his legs. He can finish the fight with a head kick or with just a big, heavy right hand. You saw what he did against Aljamain Sterling. I mean, that was eye-opening, because Sterling, I don't think, had ever even been hurt in a fight before, and Marlon Moraes had a scary knockout against him. So that's definitely something to keep an eye on. That being said, though, in Moraes' first two UFC fights, he lost a tough decision, a really close one, in his UFC debut, and then he also had a very close decision against John Dodson. So granted, they were against top guys in the division, but Moraes was not able to just completely overwhelm those guys. So considering that Jimmy Rivera is, in my opinion, one of the top 2 or 3 contenders in the division, Moraes is going to have his hands full. The biggest difference between Jimmy Rivera and Marlon Moraes in terms of where you look at all the percentages of how they've performed, I mean, defensively, these guys are both elite. They do not get hit often, both at over about 64% striking defense. But in some of the metrics that really matter, Jimmy Rivera basically outstrikes Marlon Moraes by half, 4.5 landed per minute to 3. That's huge. Because if Marlon Moraes isn't able to make up for Jimmy Rivera's voluminous striking, then with some power shots or some really stiff counters, then Jimmy Rivera could just run away with this a little bit due to just outworking Moraes. Also, Rivera, even though he's faced some very tough opponents over the course of his career, he actually has a significant accuracy advantage over Marlon Moraes. Moraes kind of looks a little bit too often for the power shot, and that actually has hurt him a little bit. I mean, Rivera's not afraid to just throw together combinations and land maybe not the most devastating powerful strike to eventually set up a good shot. So I think how this fight plays out is it's going to be even and aggressive, and both guys are going to be landing good shots, but I think Rivera is going to be landing more often, and I think Rivera is going to be the more accurate guy. So while Moraes is a little bit more diverse with his striking offense because of his kicking game, I think Rivera is going to crowd him, and Rivera will be able to mix things up a little bit with some takedowns as well. So I'm going to side with Jimmy Rivera. I think that he has what it takes to pull this out, but Marlon Moraes does have the power to turn this fight on its head. And I don't think conditioning will be a problem for either guy because both have been able to push a high pace, and Moraes has gone 5 rounds no problem, and Rivera has never shown really any conditioning issues before. So I'm siding Rivera, but I think this fight is going to be very entertaining. So that'll do it for our full event breakdown for UFC Fight Night 131. If we have a free play to give out, make sure to follow at MMAOBPremium on Twitter, because that's where we'll post them first. We can also notify you of our free bets via email alert if you prefer that method. Just send an email to picks@MMAOddsBreaker.com and we'll add you to our free bet mailing list. Special thanks to BetDSI. Good luck, everyone, and hopefully the betting gods are on your side this weekend.